Good morning. It's another Friday, and it's another edition of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted. I'm John, and I'm here with my son, business partner, Jeremy. How are you doing this week?
Hey, I'm great. How about you?
I'm doing okay as well. We're attending a happy event this weekend, so I'm already on the road. And son and brother and business partner Ben's daughter is being baptized, little Celeste. So that's a very happy occasion. So let's move right in to the topic of the day. It's California and the recall and the fact that Governor Gavin Newsom won a massive victory, beating back the recall by at least 20 percentage points, and the fact that it was a very good turnout, much higher turnout than folks anticipated, certainly would have anticipated even 2 or 3 weeks ago. How's that topic sound for you?
That caught me by surprise, so I like it.
Okay, good. That's what we do. So, all right, here's my interpretation. Above and beyond a big victory for Gavin Newsom, I think it was a big victory for Joe Biden and for the Democrats. And here's why. Biden has been in doldrums. His numbers, approval ratings have been going down, and he's been taking an enormous amount of heat, particularly for the decision and the implementation to remove American forces from Afghanistan, something that appeared to spin out of control and led to charges of anything from incompetence to the antithesis of what he wants to portray himself as, and that is caring, you know, and compassionate, empathic. His polling numbers had been sliding. He clearly identified himself, especially towards the end, with Newsom. And together they saw this battle in California as larger than Gavin Newsom, as an opportunity to defeat Trump, and in their words, Trumpism. Trump was present in California in the presence of Larry Elder, the talk show host and clearly the front runner on the part of the Republican side. And that sort of set the table nicely, I think, for Newsom to run not only against Larry Elder and the things he was saying, but against Donald Trump. And by all accounts, that appeared to be sufficient to bring out large numbers of the Democratic base and to show once again not only that California is a very deep, unmistakable blue and the Democrats control California, but a prefigure for 2022, the congressional races where the news for the previous few months had been that Democrats are on the ropes going into 2022, but this may have breathed some new life in the Democrats, showing that maybe, just maybe, they will have the capacity to have a message, which is an unpopular Donald Trump, at least among the Democratic base, and also, as Newsom showed, an ability to run against Trump as the focal point. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, we almost had a couple opportunities to poll California, and it never fell through. And I was kind of sad because I wanted our organization to be front and center in that. But I, of course, we were following the polls. And by about July, it was almost believable that Newsom could be recalled. The mm-hmm. one poll that I thought was the most legitimate was Emerson, who had, I think it was like July 21st or 22nd, they had released a poll. And it was basically 50-50. About 50% mm-hmm. were saying yes, about 50% were saying no. Very little room, if there was any, for not sures. And then, of course, Larry Elder was the favorite. And of course, we and others had conversations, you know, is that a wacky process where you just need 50% plus one vote to recall a governor, but the new governor could come in with 18 or 15%? I don't know. That's another discussion. But lo and behold, when it came to the time to pull the trigger, most Californians realized that they didn't want to abandon Newsom, no matter how much he may have been detested throughout the summer because of the harsh lockdowns, because of really a storm cloud gathering of bad news, from wildfires to extreme drought to an explosion in homelessness. And, you know, you and I were talking on the eve of the vote, and about that time, unemployment was coming to an end, federal. And so Newsom, very clever, right? And you said your words were, Santa Claus isn't going to not show up on Election Day, something like that. So he made sure that Californians who were on unemployment weren't going to also suffer on the state side or on the state level. And that could have been a major boost for him, and you know, maybe the recognition from the president, although Kamala Harris did cancel her trip to California a week leading up, and that had some interesting implications. But regardless, California stays blue. They stay very blue. But I think the lesson learned to Newsom is, don't underestimate the fact that you can really tick off a lot of people. If he wants to interpret this as a clear win and his path to do whatever he wants, I would caution him against that, because there were enough people that were dissatisfied with him to call forth a recall election. So he should be careful. And so you can poke the bear, even if it's in the most liberal of all states in the union. And so I don't think that California is the example to look at to see what's going to happen in 2022. But I do think that lesson of you could alienate your base, don't put yourself in that position. A kind of steer clear of arrogance and hubris is more the lesson in my interpretation.
Okay, so three issues. I want to take them in order. The first is, I do want to pick up on what you were talking about. In the short term, how did Gavin Newsom get in this position in the first place? That's the first. The second is the California recall, is that a good system or is it not a good system? And then thirdly, I would like to talk very briefly about Virginia, which I'm looking at really as, that's a real battleground state for starters, leaning heavily Democrat these days, but still that's really the bellwether. And Virginia normally is taking place, you know, in an odd number year as it does. It becomes kind of a bellwether for the next congressional races and what we can look forward to in the Virginia race. But first of all, I mean, how did Gavin Newsom get himself in this position? You know, some factors beyond his control. Wildfires, the most severe drought, you know, a consensus among scientists that, you know, that this is a tipping point in climate change. Those are acts of God, and they seem to be converging in the West, particularly in California. But specifically, what is it that got Newsom in such trouble that this vote was called for? I mean, I have some thoughts, but I want to hear your point of view.
No question about it. It was the lockdown and the famous French Laundry incident, if I'm saying it correctly, the restaurant. I mean, yeah. I flew out to California on the eve of another imposing of a lockdown. To my surprise, when I arrived there, Californians were basically on house arrest. So I literally found myself in the state of California in the hours that Newsom imposed another round of strict lockdowns. And no sooner of arriving in there, I mean, I was there for literally 48 hours. I had random encounters with a half dozen strangers who just started openly talking to me about how upset they were with Newsom. And I know that's not statistically significant, but qualitatively, that's fascinating that in 48 hours being in LA, you know, the most blue, possibly the most blue or the second most blue cities in all of the country, you have 6-7 random strangers who just start opening up about their frustration. And so to me, it was kind of like, okay, something is really brewing in this the state if this is happening in LA. And then of course when that incident happened, and I don't know if that was before I was there or after, it was just the penultimate hypocrisy, the penultimate example of hubris. And actually it happened around the same time that Nancy Pelosi was caught getting her hair done. And so, I mean, here you have people who are just getting by, you know, on just shy of six figures, maybe a little bit over six figures, and they have a pretty good business and enough to put food on the table and pay their rent or pay their mortgage. And these lockdowns come crushing down on them. And they're, you know, by far the most severe in all of the 50 states. And then the leader is, well, everybody knows the story. He's found at dinner not wearing a mask, while everybody else is, even if you go for a jog, you have to wear a mask. And I think that really it came down to that one event, that here was a guy who basically communicated to his people, I'm above the law. You have to follow the rules, but the rules don't apply to me. And so people were very angry, and homelessness was getting worse. And if you ever see the footage on people, random people putting up on Twitter, driving down a famous street in LA, whatever boulevard, homeless encampments, stores closed. And I think Californians were starting to ask themselves, can we do better? And I think that's purely what it is and what it was.
I mean, a perfect Marie Antoinette situation. Folks are starving in the streets. Let them eat cake, she said. And maybe just a little ironic that it was the French Laundry restaurant of all places, no less. It is. Is this recall system a good system?
Well, I want to hear your take on that. What do you think?
I mean, I see a role for it. You know, this goes back to the old populist movement, right, of the 1890s, initiative, referendum, recall, that voters should have a direct say in launching legislation, approving some legislation, and ultimately getting rid of an elected official, if not high crimes and misdemeanors, but someone with whom the majority does not have confidence. You know, they do it in Europe, you know, vote no confidence or good sense on the part of a prime minister, sensing that there'd be a no confidence vote, dissolving the government and resigning. We lack that flexibility because we have a strong executive system. But I think the recall idea is good, A, if it's used sparingly. So my fear is that recall becomes almost like impeachment. You know, I don't like what's going on. Let's just get rid of them. You know, this was $250 million that was spent. But I do believe in recall. Typically, though, the California recall is very strange. You know, it's one thing to vote someone out of office. That whole process, as you pointed out earlier, of how you replace that person is a little troubling, I think. You know, 45, 46 candidates this time. I think when it was Gray Davis and Arnold Schwarzenegger, there were over 200 candidates that were on the ballot. It almost lends itself to a circus atmosphere. And, you know, again, somebody with 12 or 18% of the vote can become the next governor. And then also because it is California, though the rest of the nation is catching up with California, we have this merger of celebrity culture with politics. So if I've got good name recognition, if I'm an influencer, or if I know how to generate a lot of clicks, hey, I'm in the mix. I could be your next governor, like that. So, and that's another reason why I'm really very happy that Gavin Newsom was able to just dismiss this. I don't particularly care for Larry Elder. That's a whole other conversation. But the very act of replacing someone who just happens to have that high name recognition is just a little troubling to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not a good system.
You know, I could go back and forth. On the one hand, so you've got the first hurdle, right, to get 50%. Well, first of all, you have to get enough signatures on the petition to get the recall in motion. And I think that's a good system. And then, so after you've established that, people go to the polls and it's a majority, 50% plus one vote. That's the first hurdle. And so if it weren't the way it is, which is whoever gets the plurality after you vote yes to recall, so would you then put up a second hurdle of whoever is to replace Gavin has to have, you're not going to get a majority. And basically you would make it nearly impossible. So I think the only way that maybe you could make it fairer is what there would be a primary for who could potentially replace, and the top two or the top three then go on the ballot for the second for the follow-up question. I don't know. I personally, I like the fact that California has this system because it goes back to really what this country was supposed to be, which was a laboratory for democracy. That states had the freedom to experiment how they want to envision their politics for their residents and for their citizens. And California has a wonderful culture of going to the polls and voting on initiatives. And so I think this is just a product of that, and it sets them apart, and it gives the rest of the country an example what they want to follow or what they don't want to follow. So to me, I was just going to say one other thing. It hasn't been abused to date. I mean, the last time they did it was, you know, about 20 years ago. And although it was comical that it was Schwarzenegger, and it was interesting that during that time, that was kind of a thing, you know, 80s wrestlers and action stars started to pop up and run for governor. Right? You had what was his name, Jesse Ventura in Minnesota. Yeah. But I mean, look, Schwarzenegger, although that was seemed to be comical, he actually turned out to be a level-headed person, and he picked up the mess that Gray Davis left behind him, and for the most part, Californians were satisfied with a moderate Republican. So I think it's kind of an homage to they've made it work.
So I'm going to just pick up on a couple of things you said. I don't have any problem with recall, you know, especially if it's not used, if it's used sparingly, and there's a good reason for it. I think it is it's democratic leverage is what it is. Democrat with a small D. Where I have the problem is the follow-up. What's wrong with the lieutenant governor taking over? I mean, the theory there is you elected a governor of a certain party. And the lieutenant governor, though independently elected, normally is the a member of the same party. So why not just carry over what voters had voted for previously? So that's one piece of it. The second piece is, I get your point about recall and then a primary and then a runoff of the top two or the top three. The only problem with that is that this costs $250 million. How many elections can you fit all in the course of a short period of time where it gets a little ungainly and, from a public policy standpoint, pretty chaotic? So in any event, it's over, and Gavin Newsom is back, and California and our democracy survives. One last point, and that is, you know, I hinted at the third thing I wanted to talk to. Traditionally, Virginia has been a bellwether because it has, Virginia and New Jersey have their gubernatorial elections odd number year before a congressional election. And we get some hints, more so from Virginia than from New Jersey. New Jersey is pretty blue. Virginia, leaning blue, but, you know, it can go back and forth. So it is characterized as a swing state. You've got Terry McAuliffe, who had been term limited, had been governor, turned out to be a much better governor than a lot of folks anticipated, and now coming back to run for governor again and leading in the polls a fellow by the name of Youngkins, who is a fairly conservative Republican. But the race is pretty close in Virginia. So whoever wins this one is really going to be considered a bellwether. Right now, McAuliffe leads. It's been tied, but the last couple of polls out have him up by about 4 points or so. Should we be focusing attention on Virginia like that, or is there too long a way to go before we get to the congressional races and too many other factors?
Yeah. Well, I would just close on my end by bringing it back to the national setting, like how you opened up. And, of course, Quinnipiac came up with a poll less than 24 hours ago showing Biden's approval rate at 42%. Now, the Afghanistan withdrawal was over 2 weeks ago, maybe by now 3 weeks ago. That could have had something to do with it. I wouldn't deny that. The question I'm asking is Biden's address to the nation last week, in which some basically have interpreted as him waging a war against the unvaccinated. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. Regardless, the nation is very split, and his approval rating is underwater. So where's that going to go? What's he going to do over the next month to get that back up above 50%? I'm curious to see what he's putting on his drawing board. Do you have any inclination as to what that could be?
Well, I think before anything else, you know, he still has the outstanding infrastructure bill, both the hard infrastructure and the soft infrastructure. And, you know, they're dealing with Senator Joe Manchin, West Virginia, Kyrsten Sinema, two moderate Democrats, she from Arizona. But I think the one thing that could help Biden the most is that this past week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell announced that the Republican caucus in the Senate would not in any way support raising the debt ceiling at the end of this month, which happens to be also the end of the fiscal year. Whether one likes raising the debt ceiling or not, the U.S. government has to have has to generate good faith by being able to pay its bills. And if it can't pay its bills, it could lose creditors, it could lose allies, it could create some real problems domestically, let alone internationally. I think every time in the last 30 years that the Republicans have forced this issue of not raising the debt ceiling, it has backfired on the GOP. And I just wonder if this is the sort of factor that could spring Joe Biden into raising his popularity a little bit. Incidentally, when Senator McConnell did the same sort of thing in the early years of Barack Obama, it was Joe Biden who actually went over to the Capitol and met privately with McConnell and was able to negotiate a deal with McConnell to not have the federal government shut down. But McConnell still looked pretty bad. So there's a lot going on, and we'll be here and we'll be talking about it next week, same time and same place. A reminder that on October 8th, a very special guest, Parag Khanna, one of the leading public thinkers in the world today, resident of Singapore, and we're going to be talking with him about his new book on the mobility of millennials and Gen Z and what that portends for institutions, politics, and economics worldwide. Parag Khanna on October 8th. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Right, Jer?
Yep. I'll see you soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.